Right now, there is a software startup effectively valuing a handful of, well, unsigned emails at $1.5 billion.
Great.
And down the street, Apple is broadcasting a live professional sports match to millions of people using a camera that literally fits in a referee's pocket. I mean, the gap between what is an absolute financial illusion and what is tangible, disruptive reality in the tech sector it's honestly never been wider.
It is a massive disconnect. We're looking at a landscape where the underlying financials of software are getting remarkably detached from reality.
Yeah.
While at the exact same time, you know, consumer hardware is quietly replacing entire legacy industries.
And that is exactly what we are tearing into today. We've got our hands on the Tech Briefing 2026, specifically the SpaceX IPO and AI Industry Shifts report from May 24, 2026.
It's a dense one.
It really is. So for you listening, the mission for this deep dive is clear. We are mapping out six era-defining shifts happening right now in technology and finance. Mm-hmm. We're looking at multi-trillion dollar space commercialization. We're dissecting AI market bubbles. And we're examining how the physical devices in your daily life are fundamentally evolving.
Exactly.
The goal is to figure out how this industry is balancing astronomical ambition with the everyday reality of the consumer. So let's just jump straight into the deepest end of the pool, SpaceX.
The scale of what SpaceX is attempting financially is, honestly, it's unprecedented. So on May 20, they filed a confidential S-1 with the SEC.
Right.
And they are targeting an initial public offering on the NASDAQ under the ticker symbol SPCX. They're looking to launch around mid-June.
But the numbers here are what made me do a double take. They're targeting a $1.75 to $2 trillion valuation.
Trillion with a T.
Trillion with a T. And they want to raise between $40 and $80 billion.
Which, I mean, that would make it the largest capital raise in history. But to understand why Wall Street is even entertaining a number that massive, you really have to look at what SpaceX actually is in 2026.
Because it's not just rockets anymore.
No, not at all. It is no longer just a rocket company launching satellites. The S-1 reveals a sprawling, vertically integrated conglomerate. You have Starlink, the satellite network. You have Starship, their deep space vehicle. And crucially, you have XAI, their artificial intelligence arm.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because I understand Starlink and Starship. But XAI,
yeah.
The briefing notes, they are burning massive amounts of cash to acquire heavy NVIDIA H200 and Blackwell GPU supercomputing clusters. I mean, that is an inferno of capital expense.
It's a huge burn rate.
It's like, okay, imagine pitching a wildly profitable internet provider to investors, but telling them, hey, you also have to fund a Mars colony and a bleeding edge supercomputer on the side.
Right.
Why don't they just laugh you out of the room? Especially considering the S-1 says Elon Musk is keeping 85% of the voting power through a dual class share structure.
It's highly unusual.
That is practically a dictatorship for public shareholders.
Yeah.
You take on all the financial risk of a supercomputer and you get zero say in the boardroom.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you hit the nail on the head regarding the risk, but you have to look at the leverage.
Okay.
Wall Street is tolerating the 85% voting lockup and the aggressive XAI cash burn because of one word, monopoly.
Ah.
SpaceX has an absolute stranglehold on global launch capacity right now. No one else can put mass into orbit at their price point or frequency.
So investors are just accepting the dictatorship because they literally have nowhere else to go.
Precisely. And, you know, it's backed by actual realized revenue. Starlink's commercial operations have matured into an absolute powerhouse.
Right. It's not just beta testing anymore.
Exactly. We aren't just talking about rural broadband. They are generating robust free cash flows across defense contracts and the global maritime sector. It is a highly profitable cash cow.
Wow.
That tangible cash flow, combined with Starship's unparalleled heavy lift capability, makes the long-term vision just too lucrative for Wall Street to pass up. The 85% voting power simply shields that long-term multi-planetary roadmap from the short-term quarterly pressures of the public market.
Okay, so investors are looking at SpaceX and saying, we will trade our control because the cash flow from Starlink is real, it's audited, and it's sitting in a bank account.
Exactly.
But when you pivot from the physical hardware of space down to the software side of the tech sector, that demand for hard reality just vanishes.
It really does.
We are seeing startups ask for billions of dollars based on money that literally does not exist.
Yes, you are referring to the May 22 TechCrunch expose on AI startup valuations.
Yeah.
This report provides a fascinating and honestly somewhat alarming look at how venture capital is currently operating. VCs and founders are actively using a metric called CAR.
CAR.
Right. Contracted Annual Recurring Revenue. And they're using it to artificially inflate AI startup valuations by anywhere from 30 to 70%.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Break down the math for me here. Because if I hear annual recurring revenue, I assume that means actual customers paying actual subscription fees to use a piece of software.
Well, that is what standard ARR is.
Okay.
Standard annual recurring revenue is strictly audited. It is GAAP compliant, meaning it follows generally accepted accounting principles. It represents realized revenue from paying active users who are currently under contract.
So it's real money.
It is the absolute reality of a company's balance sheet. CARR, on the other hand, is completely different.
How so?
It is a non-GAAP self-declared metric. CARR includes non-binding letters of intent.
Wait, non-binding?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It includes signed contracts where the service hasn't even been implemented yet, or cloud capacity bookings that haven't actually launched.
Wait, hold on. So if I have an AI startup and I get a giant enterprise client to sign an email saying, sure, we might buy $100,000 worth of your software next year if we actually like it, I can just add that $100,000 to my CARR.
Yes. You can?
That's insane.
And here is the mechanism of how that manipulates the market. You don't just add the $100,000 to your spreadsheet. In venture capital, valuations are often calculated as a multiple of revenue.
Oh, wow.
So if AI startups are currently being valued at, say, 15 times their revenue, that single non-binding email just added $1.5 million to your company's overall valuation.
That is terrifying.
It is.
Scott Stevenson, the CEO of the legal AI startup Spellbook, actually called this out on X. He said there are highly touted AI unicorns closing $1.5 billion valuations, claiming they have $100 million in CRR.
Right.
But when you look at their actual real ARR, it's under $30 million.
Exactly. The gap is huge.
But help me understand the psychology here. The top-tier venture capitalists aren't naive. They know exactly what a non-binding letter of intent is. Aren't they just playing hot potato with the tech bubble? Why are they actively playing with a fake number?
This raises an important question, and it really comes down to perverse incentives in the financial ecosystem. VCs often stay silent or actively encourage the use of KR because artificially marking up the valuations of their portfolio companies helps them directly.
How does it help them?
Well, if a VC firm can show on paper that the startups they invested in have doubled in value, it allows those VCs to go back to their own institutional backers, you know, mm-hmm. the pension funds and university endowments, and raise even larger mega funds.
Oh, I see. So it's a systemic feedback loop built on a mirage.
Precisely.
They are projecting explosive growth based on contracts that carry extreme attrition risk, because a letter of intent can be canceled or renegotiated before a single dollar ever changes hands.
Exactly. Critics are warning that substituting real AR with ARR echoes previous market bubbles. It is threatening a major structural correction because these startups simply cannot live up to the inflated expectations they've set.
And if you are listening to this right now and you are making procurement decisions for your company's tech stack, you need to be incredibly careful. If you integrate a hot new AI tool that's operating on CRR fumes, that company could run out of actual cash and go bankrupt in 6 months, taking your entire workflow down with them. It's building a castle on a foundation of maybe.
That's a great way to put it.
And if the financial foundation of these AI startups is currently a mirage, it makes you wonder how artificial intelligence is actually functioning in the real world from a user perspective. The source material outlines two massively different approaches to AI implementation right now, Spotify and Google.
It is a perfect case study in how AI can either degrade a platform or elevate it. Let's look at Spotify's aggressive expansion into creator-focused AI tools, as reported by Ivan Mehta at TechCrunch.
And the user reaction has been brutal.
It really has.
Spotify struck a licensing deal with Universal Music Group to generate AI music covers. They integrated 11 Labs narration for audiobooks, and they launched automated podcast generation tools.
Right, a huge push.
The result. The report cites a 64% increase in user interface fatigue. Listeners are saying their recommendation feeds feel utterly cluttered. There's a 45% drop in indie discovery. Mm-hmm. And the craziest stat, a 2.8 times increase in audio spam.
Wow.
We're talking click farms uploading duplicate low-fidelity AI tracks just to game the royalty system.
The critique here points to a fundamental shift in strategy. Spotify is pushing users to consume and create synthetic content, deliberately prioritizing quantity and scale over quality.
Just flooding the zone.
Exactly. And they're doing this to protect their profit margins because synthetic content is cheaper to host and license than human-created art.
It feels like walking into your favorite local record store, but the owner has fired all the staff and replaced them with robots aggressively handing you synthetic mixtapes when you just want to find a new indie band.
That's a very accurate analogy.
Contrast that with Google's approach with Gemini Spark, and it feels like hiring a hyper-competent chief of staff who lives inside your keyboard.
Gemini Spark, which Google announced for macOS later this summer, is a very different application of artificial intelligence. It isn't just a chat window living in a browser tab.
Right, it's a $100 a month background agent.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the mechanics of how this actually works, because it's fascinating.
It is.
It features system-wide, context-aware dictation that targets your active cursor. So if I'm writing an email in Gmail, and I have a PDF open on my desktop, I can just hold down a hotkey, look at the PDF, and tell my computer to summarize the third paragraph and drop it directly into my email draft.
That is exactly how it functions. It parses local PDFs and images privately on device, and it orchestrates multi-app workflows across Gmail, Docs, and even terminal windows.
That's incredible.
When we analyze the strategic divergence between the two companies, the contrast is stark. Spotify is risking its core value proposition, which has always been human artistry and curation, to protect scale.
Right.
Rivals like Apple Music are leaning hard into human-curated editorial content, which means Spotify is actively risking alienating its premium subscriber base by frustrating them with spam.
One creates friction to inflate a content pool, the other removed friction to save time.
Precisely. Google is treating AI as a high-value, cross-platform enterprise utility. At $100 a month, Gemini Spark utilizes Google AI Ultra's high-performance server-side reasoning for complex tasks while keeping the immediate context parsing local.
So it's fast and smart.
They aren't generating spam, they are streamlining business flows. It's the difference between AI as a novelty that clutters a platform versus AI as a foundational tool that saves a professional hours of manual workload.
So on the software side, we have this massive struggle, financial illusions, spam, friction, but then you flip over to the physical hardware, the actual phones in our pockets, and the technology is quietly pulling off miracles that are disrupting entire legacy industries.
The broadcast space is a perfect example of this disruption.
On May 23, Apple and Major League Soccer broadcast the LA Galaxy versus Houston Dynamo match live on Apple TV.
Yes.
And they shot the entire live television broadcast on 25 iPhone 17 Pros.
A live professional sporting event streamed globally, relying entirely on consumer mobile sensors.
Now, I hear 25 iPhones live streaming, and my brain instantly goes to 25 laggy, pixelated FaceTime calls dropping out.
Right, right.
How on earth are they getting a pristine 4K feed out of a stadium packed with 50,000 fans who are all destroying the local cellular networks?
It comes down to a few very specific technical leaps. First, they utilize the 48-megapixel triple fusion camera arrays for high-resolution feeds.
Okay.
Second, and crucially, they used Apple Log 2 encoding.
What does that do?
Well, instead of the phone software automatically adjusting the contrast and making the colors pop, which often washes out bright stadium lights, Apple Log 2 captures flat, raw sensor data.
Oh, I see.
This gives the live production truck the exact same color grading freedom they would have with a $50,000 traditional broadcast camera.
But how are they transmitting that heavy, raw data without lag?
That is where Wi-Fi 7 comes in.
Ah.
Wi-Fi 7 allows for uncompressed video feeds to punch through the interference of 50,000 smartphones in the stands, streaming to the production truck with less than 5 milliseconds of latency.
Less than 5 milliseconds. That's nothing.
In live sports, latency is everything. You cannot have the audio of a goal being scored arrive 2 seconds before the video.
It's obviously.
Furthermore, the A20 Pro image signal processor inside the phone handles hardware-accelerated noise reduction in real time. As the stadium shifts from afternoon daylight to artificial floodlights, the silicon chip instantly cleans the visual noise without dropping frames.
And because these cameras are basically the size of a deck of cards, it completely changed the cinematography of the game.
It really did.
They were putting iPhones inside the goalposts. They put them directly behind the nets. The referees were actually wearing them on chest rigs during the pregame warm-ups.
Right. You get angles you could never get with a huge rig.
So what does this all mean? If an iPhone 17 Pro can live stream a 4K HDR professional soccer match, does the multi-million dollar broadcast truck even need to exist anymore for independent creators and smaller leagues?
What's fascinating here is the democratization of production. By proving that consumer mobile hardware can handle demanding professional zero latency workflows, Apple has lowered the barrier to entry.
Hugely.
Anyone with a modest budget can now produce broadcast quality media. But if we look at the other hardware story from the briefing, Google is pushing mobile capabilities in a completely different yet equally innovative direction.
The Google Pixel Disco icons. I love this story.
But it's a fun one.
It started as a joke on X by Android head Samir Samat, a little dig at Spotify's cluttered 20th anniversary app icon. He posted a mock-up of a shiny retro disco ball Chrome icon. People went crazy for it, and Google actually integrated it into the May 2026 Pixel feature drop.
It sounds whimsical, but the technical execution behind it is deeply impressive. The icon pack leverages the phone's hardware gyroscope.
Right, so it's not just playing a pre-rendered looping video of a disco ball spinning.
No, not at all.
The phone is actively using its physical gyroscope to track the exact millimeter you tilt your wrist. And it is calculating the light reflections across the tiny digital mirrors in real time. It's essentially ray tracing the actual lighting onto an app icon.
Exactly. And it hooks into Android's Material U system.
Oh, right.
Material U extracts the dominant colors from your wallpaper, so the operating system subtly tints the silver reflections of the disco ball to match your personal aesthetic. It even uses on-device AI upscaling to turn third-party app icons into cohesive disco balls so your home screen matches.
Returning to our analysis of the hardware landscape, you know, you really see how both Apple and Google are pushing the limits of mobile processing power, but in opposite directions.
Absolutely.
Apple is democratizing professional, high-stakes utility. They're replacing heavy broadcast cameras. Google, on the other hand, is leveraging advanced sensors for deeply tactile, joyful user customization. They are creating an expressive interface that stands out in a market that often feels very standardized.
It demonstrates the vast spectrum of modern processing power. It can be utilized to broadcast a soccer game to millions, or simply to calculate the physics of light to make an app icon sparkle when you tilt your hand.
Which brings us to the core lesson of today's deep dive. Looking at all six of these shifts, the overarching theme is undeniable. We are in an era where tech is simultaneously expanding into deep space, literally, with SpaceX's $2 trillion ambition, and deeply integrating into our micro-interactions through tools like Gemini Spark and iPhone sensors.
But the ultimate test of survival in 2026 is balancing that advanced technology with genuine user experience. We see the friction when that balance is lost.
Yeah, we really do.
The backlash against inflated QR metrics in the AI bubble and the user fatigue from Spotify's AI audio spam prove that you cannot sacrifice reality and quality for the sake of scale.
And to you, listening right now, as someone who wants to stay ahead of the curve, your ultimate superpower in this landscape is being able to distinguish between inflated metrics and actual tangible value.
That's the key.
You have to know when you're looking at a $1.5 billion mirage built on non-binding emails, and when you're looking at a piece of glass in your pocket, they can completely replace a traditional broadcast crew.
Critical thinking is the only way to look past the hype and evaluate the underlying utility of a tool.
Absolutely. But I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. We've talked about all these tools, the hardware replacing the broadcast truck,
yeah. The
local AI agents seamlessly orchestrating our workflows and replacing administrative tasks.
Right.
If consumer hardware, like the iPhone 17 Pro, can replace an entire professional camera crew, and local AI agents like Gemini Spark can do the ground-level work of formatting documents and parsing data, well, what happens to entry-level jobs in media and tech?
It's a huge question.
Will the next generation of workers start their careers essentially at the manager level, simply directing hardware and AI to execute tasks? Or will those crucial hands-on learning roles disappear entirely, leaving a massive gap in how we actually learn a craft? It's something to think about the next time you hold your phone. We will catch you on the next deep dive.